Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Today's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by our friends at Starbucks. Since 2004, there has been a persistent rumor that Starbucks does not support veterans. That's just not true. They have always supported the veterans. They've been giving coffee. They've been giving hiring jobs. They've been doing all kinds of stuff. They have, since August of 2018, they've hired over 17,000 veterans and military spouses with a plan on adding 25,000 by 2025. They're doing great things all over the place, like donating 2.5 million cups of coffee in the 17 years that we've been at war in this country. 2.5 million cups of coffee. That's a long time, and 17 years is a long time too, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. But with that many years of war, there's going to be so many veterans who need help. There's going to be so many family members who are moving around the country all the time, and Starbucks is there to help. They've opened 45 military stores across military communities across America, with 132 to open by 2022. Military spouses are the unsung hero of the armed forces, and they serve this dedicated community by providing meaningful career opportunities, ability to join any store across the country whenever a family is transferred, which is huge, because Kate and I, when we were down here in San Antonio, we actually talked with one of those family members, and she said one of the biggest benefits of her working in Starbucks is that, unlike the beginning of her husband's military career, she was nervous about starting a job because she didn't know if she was going to have to quit it in 2 or 3 years. Now, when you rise above in the ranks of Starbucks, even if you start out as a barista or a cleaning person or whatever your job is at the very entry level, you can move on to a different military base, community, and find a job that you can transfer into, and you know that. So it makes the family life a lot easier. It was pretty shocking, right, Kate? Like, talking to her and how, like, comforting that was.
Oh, yeah. It's basically, it's like networking almost. If even if you move somewhere new, it's like you have a network right away. And the other military family store owner that we talked to, she made it clear that you're hired. And if she works around your schedule, because she gets that sometimes military families, when someone's deployed, it's like being a single parent. And she said she considers that and works around that too. It was just each place we went to, it was the thoughtfulness of the veterans and the military family members and the coworkers that worked there that really struck me each time. So yeah, definitely a lot of people at Starbucks going out of their way to make life a little bit easier for our military.
Definitely. Well, as I alluded to, we've been at war in Afghanistan for 17 years now. 17 years. That motherfucker can drive. It can drive alone. It can drive at night. It can drive in any state in the Union. But with it being 17 years, it's hard to kind of shift your focus back. Like, we were asking our producer, Bren, earlier today how old he was in 2001. He was 8 years old. There's people next year. People now can join the military when Afghanistan already had kicked off. That's a struggle. But let's listen to President Bush's words the night before we entered Afghanistan. 17 years ago, whenever they first go into Afghanistan, there's one part that was really omitted that I think every single military member would have. And I don't even know if you have the first generation of it anymore. I don't know if anybody even has this. It's a combo thing. Like, there's no MP3 players. Everybody that first went to Afghanistan had a Discman. Yep. And Kate, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've never actually stepped foot in Afghanistan, but I imagine that it's kind of the same as Iraq. It's a pretty dusty place. A
little bit dusty. Oh, you're going to be blowing, a lot over there, just on the CD itself and inside the player. But yeah, no, definitely very dusty. I can't imagine. Like, music was so – having my iPod over there was so helpful.
Game changer. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Especially at night when you're like – I was like sharing tents
Olden
with like
times of challenging.
Yes. Like sharing a tent with a lot of dudes, just a plywood wall. I'm like, I don't want to hear the fapping. Put on my iPad, put on my iPod, zone out, blah, blah.
Once the poncho liner starts rustling, you know what's going on.
Right. And so I imagine if you have a dusty CD player and it breaks, and the headphones for those, remember how awful
they
were?
Those headphones used to stink. Yeah.
Like, all of that.
Remember. The little foamies on the side.
Yeah.
Just little...
Oh, wow. Yes.
Split your ears.
Those guys definitely had to bring the big, big, huge book full of CDs that was probably a pain in the ass to transport to Iraq and Afghanistan, or Afghanistan in this case. So that was definitely a pain to deal with.
Did you guys have, whenever you were deployed, did you have any go-to songs that you listened to that was in your headphones to kind of get you to pass the time? Mine was a big one. I'll let you think because I just threw this on the fly. Mine was – I was a huge Frank Sinatra listener.
Yeah.
Because when I was doing – when I was with reconnaissance, I was always out a good 100, 200 feet in front of everybody else, maybe even further sometimes depending on what – how well you could see. So in one ear, I would have communication with the squad, and the other – ear I would have from my Microsoft Zune, not even
Zune.
Have my Zune in and the other ear, and I would listen to Frank Sinatra's greatest hits while I was walking through. There was just something really almost funny but calming to me about looking for bombs and hearing I've got the world on a string.
Yeah.
It's almost surreal.
No, I did the same thing in my vehicle. I would have one earbud in my ear listening to music, and then the other one was on comms talking to the rest of my platoon. So I can definitely remember that. But the one song that, I don't know, it always comes to mind now is the thing that was most prevalent for me the back half of my deployment was watching One Tree Hill. So Gavin DeGraw, I Don't Wanna Be. It was just permanently stuck in my head. And now it's funny. Anytime I hear it at a bar, I will definitely text my buddy Rob and just – either a video of myself singing along to it or just the fact that it's playing out there. It's always a good laugh.
I was madly, madly in love at the time.
Oh.
And so I would lay in my sleeping bag at night and I would play like the sappiest love songs and I would cry in my sleeping bag and be like, oh, you looking at the moon? I'm like, maybe we both looked at the moon tonight. Oh my God.
A lot of dashboard confessional.
Yeah.
Kate's sitting on top of a mountain in Afghanistan. Somewhere out there.
Also, I
a real American tale.
Like Uncle Cracker would come on where it's like, you're cooler than the flip side of the pillow. And I'm like, he loves the cold side of the pillow. Yeah, so
I would
work myself up into a thing and then I'd be like, let me make it worse by playing sad music.
Yeah.
I listened to a lot of like sappy, awful love tunes.
But during the day
it was country.
Yeah. But one thing is for certain, when we went to war in Afghanistan in 2001, there were some bangers floating around the radio. Let me read to you from Billboard the top 10 songs from 2001. Number one was Lifehouse, Hanging by a Moment. Banger.
Make sure you give enough of a pause because we're not going to do the people injustices and give these top 10 and then have them go search for it later because we're a podcast for the people, by the people. We know that you're probably driving or walking somewhere. Maybe you have it downloaded where you don't have Spotify. So we're going to pump it in. You can remember back because I'm pretty positive that was the year that Willis McGahee had his terrible
knee injury. Yes.
Yeah. I think that was against Ohio State.
Yes, it was.
And I think that was the 2001 Orange Bowl. You also, I think that was a Patriots Super Bowl season.
It was.
I want to say.
In 2001, I mean, that was that Miami team that arguably was the best college football team of all time.
Yeah, I think between them, the 2003 Miami Hurricanes is the best ever.
Okay.
But
definitely, that was Miami's heyday for sure, aside from the 80s.
Well,
but
you know,
either way, long time. It's been a long time coming. And the good news is, because we talked about that, in 17 years, it feels like we'll be able to go back and have another 34-year throwback because there is no end in sight to this.
No.
Seriously.
I think it's just going to keep rolling along.
Speaking of that, I saw a meme on Instagram that was very poignant, and it said, who can defeat this guy? And it was a picture of Captain America, and the only response was, the only people that could do it is probably – Captain Vietnam, Captain Iraq, and Captain Afghanistan.
Yeah. Pretty
That's
much.
So perfect.
And,
That's so perfect.
Just to give a perspective on it, this is from The Hill, but so this Sunday marked 17 years. So on October 7th, 2001, U.S. and British planes began striking Taliban positions, beginning Operation Enduring Freedom. The combination of Afghan allies, CIA teams, American air power, and special forces horse soldiers broke the Taliban's army in a matter of months. Yet, 17 years later, America's longest war still grinds on today, mostly on autopilot. We have spent almost $2 trillion with a T, and lost nearly 2,400 servicemen and women in Afghanistan. The Taliban, who wants to be bummed out?
Yeah.
The Taliban now controls more territory than any time since 2002. The U.S. government claims that 44% of Afghan districts are controlled or contested by the Taliban. However, independent analysts say it's about 59%. Afghan security forces, despite 17 years of Western funding and mentorship, the Afghan National Army, and the alphabet soup of different military, police, and paramilitary organizations, are unable to fight and win on their own. And in fact, I was reading the New York Times, and over the last 24 hours, at least 54 people have been killed across Afghanistan. I'm looking at this here, Afghan security forces and 35 Afghan security forces and 19 civilians. So 54, as the war turned 17 years old, 54 people killed across the country. And we also lost a member of the National Guard on Saturday, on the 6th.
Damn.
So in Helmand province. So what are we doing?
I don't know. And I don't know what the answer is either. Yeah. I don't know if it's we need a, you know, the next time a new president comes in, whether that's 2020 or 24, if they're going to get us out, Jesus, I hope we're not still there in 24, or if it's just one person really championing the cause to get us out of there.
Right.
Like, what's really
amazing is that we still have people who are willing to sign up. Like,
yeah.
And you don't need a draft. Like, you have this long of a war that's going on with no real end in sight. No, I don't think that most people – because when you join directly after, I would say, the 4 or 5 years after September 11th,
mm-hmm.
there was a visceral reaction to what happened to America that you wanted to respond in
yes.
some type of way.
Yes.
I don't know if in the general public, and I would venture to say there's not that visceral reaction that we're at war with our enemies.
I mean,
I would say that you're joining just because out of a sense of duty, like you want to go see the world, like you want to protect in case something happens. But the visceral reaction of I want to protect from this visible enemy right now, I don't think it's there anymore.
I would agree with that. If you made a list of top 10 reasons why people join the military, that would either be number 11 or not even on the list at all. Because as you said, I mean, I hate to say it, and we try to do the best job that we can to never forget what happened on 9/11 and why we went into Afghanistan initially. But you can't recreate those feelings, right? So if you're a young person...
A lot harder when Bin Laden's dead.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can't recreate those feelings for these young people that are joining the military. So you're right, Chaps. I would agree with you. There's probably not that visceral feeling that you need to join the military to go avenge what happened on 9/11. Because I feel like we've done that in spades.
I think the number one reason now is to get laid. To look good in your dress uniform and get that pussy or dick for the ladies.
And that's going to be happening soon.
Or pussy for the ladies. It's 2018.
Hey, 2018,
you
man.
You do you, is what I say.
Suck whatever you want to.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And now with the Army going back to the pinks and greens, I think we might be able to compete now.
Those are nice
Marines.
Uniforms, yeah.
Yes.
But I think that will remain the number one reason for a while. But also, I think people are still joint because now if... For the kids, like they're not kids, but the kids who are joining now, this is all they've ever known.
Mm.
They have never been in a country that wasn't at war, pretty much. And I feel like it's so normalized that it's like, oh, yeah. Oh,
that's just part of joining the military. Oh, I'm going to go do my tour.
I mean, it's like looking at the Patriots. Like for a kid who's 21, 22 years old, you don't know them as anything other than the AFC champions,
right.
Like the AFC favorite. Mm-hmm. But if you're our age, you can remember a time where the Patriots stunk.
Yeah, in the 90s? Oh, yeah. They weren't even a freaking factor in the NFL.
They
were the bottom of the barrel.
Without getting, like, too whatever, like, much like I like to listen to my sad songs on my first deployment and feel sad, here I go again. But I think what I really had a hard time with when I first got out of the military, and I finally had time to really reflect on it and process it, and I wasn't in the bubble anymore, so I could look at it from a different perspective. And I really, really struggled the first few years with looking at it, analyzing it, and the question, what the fuck are we doing? Because I lost friends over there, and I saw really difficult things over there, and I became friends with some of the local people there who my heart broke for, who they're like a soccer ball kicked between us and the Taliban, and I also saw from going outside the wire that it wasn't sustainable. Like any Lance Corporal could have told you that you knew it deep down. You knew that it was like a waste of time kind
mm-hmm.
of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once my, like, I'm just being, I hope this isn't too heavy, but, like, once my friends got killed and stuff, like, it was like, what is the point? Like, why did this happen? What is the point? And I know I'm not the only one of my friends who's, like, really struggled with that. Like, was it all in vain? And it doesn't make their deaths any less, I don't even know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like,
no, yeah.
It's just something that I've really struggled with since then. And I think each time another anniversary of the war comes around, 15 years, 16 years, 17 years, and, like, I know there's going to be an 18. And, like, we just lost someone on Saturday. And how,
What has to happen?
Yeah.
Really, at this point, what has to happen for us to get ourselves out of there? And I don't think you should think that your friends died in vain. They died in service, and that's what the military, in your case the Marines, asked them to do and asked them to serve in that capacity. So certainly their sacrifice is not for it's not all for naught.
But I just feel like we're owed, the American people are owed a plan. Like, give me a fucking plan. Like, what are we doing? I feel like they're not.
I remember, I think it was in 2008, 2009, whenever Fallujah fell again. Yes. And
My heart broke.
I had been gone from Fallujah for like 4 years, 3 or 4 years at the time. And at that point, there was a time when between when I left Fallujah to when Fallujah fell again, I was like, you know what? I can at least hang my hat on outside this little section in Fallujah. There's little girls who are going to school. There's not as many things going on. Al-Qaeda's not in charge there anymore. Like, we've kind of freed that a little bit. And that was the little nuggets, like all the things that I went through, all the things that my friends went through made that worth it, because you achieve liberty for some people. When Fallujah fell again, you didn't really have anything to hang your hat on anymore. You look back and you're like, well, they got the fucking city again, man. So you think about what happened in Fallujah 1, what happened in Fallujah 2, and Ramadi, and all the roads in between, and you're just thinking, God damn, all of Al-Anbar province is fucked again.
And that's like I remember when that happened, and across the board you could see it on like veteran Twitter and veteran Facebook, and like, it was
that was
heartbreaking.
The most I think when Fallujah fell, that was the most deflated I've ever seen social media for veterans.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. Like,
Fallujah legitimately was like, you could pin this as something that we did that was great.
It was concrete. Yeah.
And then now seeing the Taliban taking Helmand over again, it's not on the same scale, but it's that same heartbreak feeling. I'm like, what was the point? Why did this happen to my friend? Like, it just makes it hard.
And
but
I mean, if you look at it,
people that were inexperienced there, like the people who were battalion level leaders, at most regiment level leaders, are the ones who are the chief
ones,
of staff.
Yes.
House. It's fucking Mattis. It's Kelly. It was Flynn. It was all Petraeus. It was all those people who have been there the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, how are you not doing anything different? How many articles does the Washington Post, Military Times, the New York Times have to post that say we're turning the corner? You're going in a circle, dude. There's no corners. It's a circle.
And I mean, just look back through history and beyond just our country, but, you know, history in the world. And to take those different cities, the different provinces in Afghanistan, to then just hold on to them for the rest of time. It's impossible.
Right.
You've seen the greatest empires have fallen, you know?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, I mean, not to maybe necessarily compare it on that scale, but I don't think it was a sustainable operation, ultimately, in the end. So the fact that we had zero exit strategy, we still have zero exit strategy to my knowledge, it really is disheartening. Now, for both of you and the things that you said and the accomplishments and then subsequently feeling deflated, I don't think that should necessarily be the foremost thought, because I think you should take solace in the fact that what you did was positive, that what you did was accomplish your mission at that time. You can't look back and see something 3-4 years later that happened in your AO and say, oh, well, I should feel defeated now, because that's well past your mission.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you want to be part of the team, and something that happens in the Marines now, it still does affect you. But I don't think you should feel as deflated as if you let those people down.
And eventually, as more time went out, I felt that so sharply after the first few years after I got out that I really struggled with it and had a really hard time with it. But as time has gone by, I learned that it's just not productive.
Right.
It, thinking that way just, yes, it sucks, but like it doesn't help you get anywhere. And sometimes, like for me, it took like the Headstrong Project and talking to somebody and like talking it out and blah, blah, blah to get to this point. But yeah, so if you're out there and you're struggling with that, you're definitely not alone.
It's kind of like in Good Will Hunting when Robin Williams says, it's not your fault.
Right.
It's not your
yeah.
fault.
Yeah.
It's not your
yeah.
fault. It's not your guys' fault. You accomplished your mission for the time you were there. And, you know, the people, I think, if you were going to place blame on anyone, let's place blame on our leadership all the way up to include the presidents that have come through since our time in Afghanistan. And the fact that we are still there, I think, falls ultimately to the leadership.
How do you like them apples?
Huh? Boom.
I like them a lot. And I want to make sure that I point out, I'm not saying that it's President Trump's leadership people who are in charge. Those have been the same people since Bush was mm-hmm. there. Like mm-hmm. they've been doing it at the same time. And they might, we have to get to a point where we say they might suck at it.
Yeah, maybe they're not. Maybe what they're doing is not right. And I think the proof's yeah. in the pudding. And interestingly enough, there's a movie coming out with Christian Bale playing Vice President Cheney. And I think it's going to get into the details of how he had his fingers on a lot of things that have gone on in the last two decades. So, you know, I'll leave it at that.
I'm already triggered about this movie just from the trailer.
Yeah.
Because it makes President Bush look like some little bitch-ass cuck.
Yeah.
I don't like it, man. Like, when he's sitting there and he's sitting across the table from Cheney, and Cheney's like, I got everything figured out where I'm going to take over mm-hmm. all these different things. Get the fuck out of here. Like, this over-dramatization of what they've made President Bush as like a caricature is unbelievable. You don't get to be the president of the United States by being a little bitch boy.
No, not at all. Not at all. So, I mean, but that's going to be Hollywood. They're going to depict things the best way it's going to be for their movie. And speaking of movies, let's, I think, round it out. We talked about songs.
Wait, can I say one more thing?
Yes.
Christian Bale.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
The Batman himself. Smoke show. Wood. Fast forward. He looks just like fucking Dick Cheney.
Yeah, fat and all. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What?
It's interesting.
He's had probably the most diverse body styles of any actor
yeah.
that there is.
Yeah.
Like,
it's the one where he's like super skinny.
The mechanic,
and,
yeah. I think it's the mechanic.
So great. Dick Cheney even ruined Christian Bale for me. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
But anyway, let's round it out today's episode with talking about the movies from 2001. So here were the top 10 at the box office in 2001. Number one, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Never saw it.
If you had to put a sorting hat on, if I had to put a sorting hat on Cons, Bren, and Chats, I would do, you're a Hufflepuff, buddy. You would do Cons.
I don't even know what that is.
You're
so I don't
full
even know
Hufflepuff.
I don't even know if I should be offended or what.
Bren, little Slytherin-y sometimes, but I'm going to give you, I'm going to say.
No, it's okay. You can say Slytherin.
No, you're not. You're a Gryffindor, buddy. You're a Gryffindor.
I don't know what any of this means.
Chaps.
I mean, that's actually kind of like very surprising that you can't even name the four
Ravenclaw.
Harry Potter classes.
Chaps, yeah. You're a Ravenclaw mix of the Hufflepuff. I'm a Gryffindor, clearly. Okay. Okay, but anyways, go on.
Anyway, number two, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. Never saw that either.
If I had to give you each a wizard recommendation. No, okay, go ahead.
Number three, Monsters, Inc. Number four, Shrek. Number five, Rush Hour 2. Number six, The Mummy Returns. Number seven, Pearl Harbor. Number eight, I think, is the best one on this list, Ocean's 11. Number
Never
nine.
Never seen it.
You should. Number
My
nine.
My favorite part about Ocean's 11 is that they're super stylish. You could be super stylish, too, with our friends at Thursday
Ooh.
Boots. Money, power, and a great pair of boots. You can have it all. Want to know how? Stop what you're doing. Go to the nearest computer. Open your internet browser and type this following, ThursdayBoots.com. That's ThursdayBoots.com. Pick out your favorite pair of beautifully,
they're beautiful,
handcrafted boots. Add it to your cart. Click checkout. Fill out all your personal information. Click purchase. It's that easy. Money, power, and a great pair of boots will all be yours. While results may vary, particularly regarding the money and power, you will definitely have a great pair of boots this year. Get a great pair of boots that will last all season. Get a pair of boots handcrafted with the highest quality materials and sold at honest prices. Get a pair of Thursday boots. Head on over to ThursdayBoots.com and use the promo code FREESHIPTODAY. Money, power, and a great pair of boots will be only 2 days away. That being said, my favorite pair of boots that I have, they're made out of footballs.
Yeah,
Whoa.
Those are so cool. I'm so jealous of those boots.
Because they were
boots,
a limited edition,
yes.
and I jumped on it like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they are the best boots ever to wear it to a football game.
Thursday boots have made a resurgence here at Barstool with the Barstool boot, but I mean, they were with us first, and there's a reason that they're still around, because those things are so comfortable, so stylish. I swear by them.
And free shipping. Normally, if you want free shipping, you got to join the Navy. Am I right? Wow.
Yikes.
All right. So finishing out, number 9, Jurassic Park 3. Number 10, Planet of the Apes. And then a few other notable 2001 movies. American Pie 2, Save the Last Dance, Training Day, Castaway, Legally Blonde, and Hardball. All good.
Training
movies.
Day might be – it's. What do you guys think about this? Training Day could possibly be the most memed movie that there is.
That's tough to know one way or the other, but there certainly are quite a lot.
Well, you know what? Speaking of Training Day, you know who needs more Training Day?
Who needs more Training Day?
The Navy football team, gang.
Uh-oh.
They got crushed as the Air Force crossed into the end zone. Not the blue this time around. And DJ Hammond, he was their big guy. He got sidelined early in the game after a helmet-to-helmet collision. He returned for 3 touchdowns and threw for another, leading Air Force past Navy 35-7 on Saturday.
Yeah, that was an ugly, ugly game.
That was an ugly game. Now, Air Force will play Army on November 3rd, and Navy plays Army on December 8th. But, ouch, Navy.
Yeah, not
get
a
it
good
together,
look.
Guys.
Not a good look for Navy this week. They did not look great.
No.
I don't want to say anything about our upcoming games with Air Force and Navy, but they just didn't look good.
No.
So that's all I'll say about that.
All right, we'll be back on Friday with a brand new episode. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Starbucks for sponsoring the show. And look, I want to make it clear. If you are on the ground, boots on the ground, if you're listening to this at a forward operating base, what you're doing for the country is exactly what your country asks for you, and we value that completely and wholeheartedly. We just wanted to take a little bit of a dump on the people who are making the decisions. If you're the trigger arm of the military, we appreciate you and what you're doing. Your service is valuable, and what you mean to the country is valuable. That goes without saying. That'll be true if we're in Iraq for 4,000 years or for 4 more. Either way, we love our active duty. We love you so much. Sound the retreat.